Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about George Floyd. Our story is from Al Jazeera and is entitled, UK Newspaper Publishes Unreleased Video of George Floyd's Death. The clips were shown to some media but not released publicly and reveal the final encounter between Floyd and police. A Minnesota court is investigating how a British newspaper obtained body camera footage showing the arrest and death of George Floyd, an unarmed black man who died after an officer kneeled on his neck for nearly 9 minutes in May. The Daily Mail on Monday published parts of videos from cameras being worn by two now former Minneapolis police officers involved in Floyd's arrest on May 25th in the United States. A Hennepin County judge last month allowed journalists and members of the public to view the footage by appointment, but has not yet ruled on a motion by a coalition of news organizations seeking public access to the videos. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, whose office is leading the prosecution of the four fired Minneapolis police officers charged in Floyd's death, said he was not the source of the leak. "We will continue to take the strictest precautions to ensure a fair trial," Ellison said in a statement. The newspaper's article said that the videos were leaked to DailyMail.com. The website shows about 10 minutes from former officer Thomas Lane's body cam and about 18 minutes from former officer Jay Kung's body cam. Kung's body camera shows the officers walking into Cup Foods, where they speak to the owner, who had called them about being paid with counterfeit money. The footage then shows two officers approaching Floyd's car. One officer, Lane, goes to the driver's side and the other, Kung, to the passenger's side. Lane taps on the driver's side window, where Floyd is sitting with a flashlight. Floyd appears initially slow to comply, repeating, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." Lane is heard yelling, "Let me see your hands," and "Put your expletive hands up." Within seconds, Lane draws his gun and points it at Floyd, eliciting a look of terror. The officer tells Floyd to put his hands on the wheel. He is again slow to comply before saying, "Yes, sir," and placing his hands on the wheel. Floyd is heard apologizing and saying the situation reminded him of the last time I got shot. Floyd begins crying as Lane tells him to get out of the car. "Please don't shoot me," Floyd repeats. At one point he said, "I just lost my mom, man." The officers handcuff Floyd, who remains distraught. "I'm going to die in here," he said. Kung's footage shows Floyd sitting on the sidewalk while he's being asked identifying questions and tells him that the officers reacted in the way they did because he did not immediately show his hands. Floyd sobs at some points but remains compliant. Meanwhile, Lane's camera captures him speaking to the two passengers in the car, asking why Floyd was, quote, "being all squirrely and not showing us his hands and just being weird like that." Shawanda Hill responds, "because he's been shot before." "He's got a thing going on," she adds, pointing to her head and making a circular motion. The officers then attempt to put Floyd in the back of a police car. Floyd refuses, saying, "I'm claustrophobic." At one point, he falls to the ground but gets back up and refuses to get back into the car. "Y'all, I'm gonna die in here," Floyd says. "I'm going to die, man. I just had COVID, man. I don't want to go back to that." The officers finally move Floyd into the back of a vehicle and close the driver's side door, but Floyd emerges through the passenger side door. At this point, officers Derek Chauvin and Tu Tao have arrived on the scene. Floyd tussles with officers in the passenger side. The struggle ends with him on the ground and Officer Chauvin kneeling on his neck. Floyd can be heard repeating, "I can't breathe," and calling out for "Mama. Tell my kids I love them. I'm dead," he is also heard saying. At one point, when Floyd says he can't breathe, an officer identified by the Daily Mail as Kung is heard telling him, "You're fine. You're talking fine." "I'm through. I'm claustrophobic. My stomach hurts. My neck hurts. Everything hurts. I need some water or something," Floyd is also heard saying. An officer identified by the Daily Mail as Chauvin replies, "Then stop talking. Stop yelling. It takes a lot of oxygen to talk." At one point, an officer identified as Lane asks, "Should we roll him on his side?" Chauvin responds, "No, he's staying where we've got him." "Okay," Lane replies. "I just worry about the excited delirium or whatever." Chauvin replies, "Well, that's why we've got the ambulance coming." Floyd stops moving as Chauvin continues to kneel on his neck. Several people are heard yelling from off camera, some calling for the officers to check his pulse. "You call what you're doing okay?" one man says from off camera. Chauvin has since been charged with second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and manslaughter. Lane, Kung, and Tao are charged with aiding and abetting both second-degree murder and manslaughter. All four officers were fired from the department after the incident. So I've watched the portion of the video that the Daily Mail published. I've watched it, and I recommend you watch it. I recommend everyone watches it. I think that it adds a lot of context to the situation that was missing beforehand, but that's not really important. At least that's not the most important part of this story, nor is Al Jazeera's commentary on the video all that important. What I think is fascinating, what I think the real story is that the judge is mad that the video got leaked. Why? Why is he mad? Why is the court upset about this? Well, ostensibly, the judge and the court are upset because they feel that this video being public will somehow prejudice a jury. Presumably, it will prejudice a jury to exonerate officers because it shows that Floyd was a very large and very strong and very high and very uncooperative man who was doing everything he could to use his size as a means of passive resistance. He lies throughout the video and cries wolf throughout the video and makes it hard for officers to determine when to take him seriously and when not to. Again, does this video mean that the Minneapolis Police Department did nothing wrong? No, it doesn't. Does it help explain why MPD may have been so frustrated and so tired of the resistance and the lying that they permitted Chauvin to kneel on Floyd even though officers had potential medical concerns? Yeah. And can both be true at once? Yes. We can simultaneously accept that Floyd's resistance, noncompliance, lying, and the fact that he had a lot of drugs in his system contributed to him being put in a bad situation. We can also say that kneeling on his neck when officers knew that this could have health complications was wrong. Both can be true. It's not victim blaming to say that someone is sometimes a victim who's put themselves in a position to be victimized. Are we saying that Floyd bears zero responsibility? I mean, is that really what we're saying? Is that Floyd bears zero responsibility in his death? Because I think only a great fool would say that. He was allegedly passing counterfeit bills, which, according to Minnesota law, if it were under $1,000 worth of goods or services purchased with the fake notes, he would have had a maximum of 1 year in jail and a $3,000 fine. The passing of counterfeit money is alleged, but anyone who watches the video can see him physically resisting officers when he is in absolutely zero physical danger. In fact, it is Floyd who puts himself on the ground while wriggling out of a police cruiser. Were the Minneapolis Police Department wrong for kneeling on his neck? Yep. Did Floyd contribute to his own demise? Yep. But again, that's not the point. Remember, I said the big point of this article is that the video got leaked to the Daily Mail and they published it. But here's the question, and this is important, so I want to be extra special clear when I ask this. If the video was so prejudicial, why was it shown to news outlets at all? If it's so prejudicial, why did CNN get to see it? I mean, I know that no one could ever imagine, not even imagine, CNN misrepresenting data or twisting facts to suit theories, they being the paragons of truth in journalism. But CNN was indeed shown the video, and CNN commented on the video. Omar Jimenez of CNN went on to describe what he saw in the video on CNN. It was a lengthy description. So let's think about this. The video is prejudicial, and actually, I'm inclined to agree that the video is prejudicial. I think that the news publishes way too much about cases before the actual trial. In fact, my wife was assaulted as a teenager, and the case against her assaulter was compromised because she had seen her assaulter's picture in the paper. His maximum sentence was greatly reduced because she saw his picture in the paper. I think that far too often district attorneys are using the pretrial news as campaign ads, and I think that we should get a lot of that information as it comes out in the trial or not at all. I understand that people want to know what's happening in our community. I understand that. And we have a right to know. But we publish way too much. And I think that that does prejudice juries. On the other hand, and I think that this is the crucial part, and this is my point of departure from the Minnesota court's position. This is where I and the Minnesota court diverge. And I think that this is the point of departure that every person who isn't a crazy person must accept as the point of departure, the point of divergence from the position that the Minnesota court is taking. If watching, this is my case here, if watching the video is prejudicial, how is hearing a politicized description of it not prejudicial? Why is it so prejudicial to a fair trial for the Daily Mail to publish this that the Minnesota courts are investigating how it got leaked, but it's not too prejudicial to allow CNN to view it and then comment on it? And therein lies the frustration that so many people have with the way major events are dealt with in this country. Many, many people in this country feel that the mainstream media and big tech and the deep state are all actively conspiring to give you a biased view of the day's events that will better conform to fit the narrative that they want you to hear because it's the narrative that they want you to accept. Many Americans believe in conspiracy theories because members of the media, big tech representatives, and officials in our government are behaving conspiratorially. Now, am I saying there's a conspiracy? No. No, because conspiracies require secrecy. CNN and Google aren't conspiring to give you a slanted and biased view of the events of the day. They just are. Like, their views on the news are biased. And it's a rather naked bias. It's not a conspiracy, at least not in the common use of the term. It's just open bias. And open bias is okay. I'm openly biased towards Christ and Christianity. I think and I write from the position that Christ is truth and the Bible is the inerrant, infallible, inspired revelation of God's will to mankind. I don't apologize for that, but I am open about it. Now, you could say, you could make the argument that CNN and MSNBC and Google and Facebook and all the others are conspiring because they pretend to be unbiased. I mean, in that sense, it may be a conspiracy to the, like, 11 people who still think CNN is an unbiased agency. But for the majority, the overwhelming majority of people, like 96% of people, according to one poll, everybody recognizes that there is some level of bias in media. And this is a problem. Even though the Washington Post likes to pompously posture and pontificate about how democracy dies in darkness, it is they themselves who are muddying the already turbid waters by eroding confidence in the news media broadly. People are more and more not seeing the news as the fourth estate, but as a fifth column. And this is bad. This is not good for the country. Now, here's what I don't think the solution is. This is what I don't want to see. I don't want a bunch of prevaricating nonsense about how the news is unbiased. That's ludicrous and self-serving. And worse, it doesn't solve the problem. The people who lived in the communist bloc came to hate journalists from Pravda and other, you know, committee central party organs that just publish the same old tripe and lies. People who punch back at President Trump for Trump calling the news the enemies of the people, they're missing the point. Trump isn't an outlier in his opinion. He's a bellwether. And that's a distinction with a difference. Wrestling with the mud monster who is Donald Trump isn't going to convince anyone that the major news outlets are objective and unbiased. It's a political relations non sequitur. Sure, it plays to the base, but preaching to the choir never changes minds, and moreover, it's intellectual masturbation. Sure, it feels good to throw haymakers at Orange Man, but does this really actually address the underlying problem? Because the underlying problem is that news outlets twist facts and data to suit their narratives. And this happens on the right and the left, by the way. This is bad enough, but what's very bad is when a judge in the United States decides that it's okay for a bunch of handpicked journos to watch the prejudicial evidence and then give a biased report on the prejudicial evidence, but it's not okay for us plebs, to watch it ourselves and make up our own minds about the contents of the video. It certainly feels like there are people who are trying to keep information away from the average person. It certainly feels like this whole thing is inappropriate and untoward. It feels that way because it is that way. It is that way because we have a government official saying that the truth is only acceptable after it's been massaged. Right now, we have people in our government, people with real legal power, who are saying that the truth is only acceptable for public consumption after a biased media mandarin has teased it and airbrushed it. But people shouldn't want airbrushed truth. We should just want the truth. It doesn't need to be qualified. If it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander, right? If CNN can see it and then report on this prejudicial information, then why can't we all just see it and cut out the middleman? Why is the video not too prejudicial to have it described to us by members of our mediocrity, but too prejudicial for us to see it ourselves? As Christians, these questions matter because Christians, more than anyone, need to care about the truth because we claim to love and serve the truth himself with a capital T. Christians ought to desire the truth, whether it affirms or undermines our political priors. More truth is always a good thing. And we should always be seeking truth, and we should never simply accept that truth needs to be adulterated or corrected or arranged for us before it's appropriate for us. Truth doesn't need to be sanitized and contextualized by our media elite before it's acceptable for public consumption. We just need more of it. More truth is always better, and we should never be happy with less truth, neither less of it, nor less than it. As Christians, we must desire and seek more truth. I hope and pray we will, and I hope you'll join us again next week for another exciting episode of Truth and Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to His glory.